Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. First and foremost, apologies that this podcast is coming so late in the week after, obviously, a very exciting win against Miami for Florida State. 7 in a row for the Seminoles over the Hurricanes. It's the second time that has been done in this series, but certainly the first time in quite a while that Florida State has had that kind of streak. And it continues Jimbo Fisher's ownership of in-state rivals at Florida State. Certainly something that even if the year itself is a little disappointing, it's a good way for Fisher to maintain both fan goodwill and also recruiting momentum in the state. This was a game where, really, I think Florida State needed to win this game for the program moving forward. And in many respects, I think we may be able to look back on this game in a couple of years, few years. I wonder whether we're going to be able to look back on this game as sort of a pivot point or a fulcrum point for Florida State as a whole for where the program went after this game. Because quite frankly, with Mark Richt at Florida or at Miami, and Mark Richt starting to build a good product there and put together a program on that field that's a better cultural fit with what Miami has done previously, and I think we saw in this game that is clearly happening. This was a game that Florida State couldn't really lose because, you know, that first-year coach gets a win in the first year in the series, and he can start to sell to recruits. We're now going to be on the ascent. We're taking over the state. And for those kids that are down in South Florida, where it's often a Florida State Miami battle, that's a big deal. To say that you're the program that's on the ascent, you start joining the program with a little more swagger. We won it in our first year here, and now we're gonna start dominating on our way up. That would have been really bad for Florida State and for Florida State's recruiting efforts going head to head with Miami for a little while. Even the way that this game was as close as it was, it's going to give Miami some things to be able to market with, to be able to recruit with. But it's not as damaging, obviously, as a loss would have been, because Florida State can go back in and say, listen, we've won 7 straight against them, and we took care of business on their home field. You know, they still, you know, same old Miami, they came in and they, you know, did what they did, but ultimately, at the end of the day, if you want to win in this series, you come up and play with us. That's a big deal for recruiting moving forward, and it continues to keep the stranglehold that Florida State has had on the state of Florida and in recruiting and in the minds of recruits, that even when Florida State seems like they're having a little bit of a down period, in which they did early in the season, which I still think is in large measure the result of schedule and combination of schedule and inexperience and injuries and so on that sort of conspired to make this Florida State team look worse than they actually are. I mean, it's amazing how the team went from, I think, overrated at the beginning of the season to underrated at this point in the year. But this game, I think, sort of served as a way of keeping the program from falling off the cliff. And it's crazy to think about because, I mean, Fisher's program has been so healthy since he took over. And, you know, he has built a strong culture, by and large, with this Florida State program, but the program was starting to totter just a little bit, and you know, people were starting to wonder whether or not Fisher would be able to get things back on the rails. And I think this game was in many respects a little bit of the balm that the doctor prescribed to make sure that the program doesn't teeter, doesn't start taking on a little bit of water, to use more of a nautical metaphor, moving forward. And so that in itself, a big deal, obviously, one more year of bragging rights for fans who have to deal with, well, I guess there aren't very many Miami fans in real life, but there's lots of them on the internet. So So, you know, fans who have to deal with that sort of thing can, you know, Florida State fans who have to deal with that sort of thing moving forward still have bragging rights for yet another year. And, of course, with Miami losing most likely Brad Kaya after this year, although I'm not sure after his, the way that he looked against Florida State, and I'm not sure given what he's shown on tape so far this year, I'm not sure that his draft grade is actually going to be high enough to suggest that he should leave after his junior year. So I think it's entirely possible that he comes back. But if Kaya leaves in particular, this Miami team does have to do some retooling for next year. And obviously they come to play Florida State in Tallahassee in a veteran Florida State team, which should be a loaded Florida State team in 2017. So, you know, this streak is more than likely going to run to 8. And again, that's a really, really big deal moving forward for FSU not to have taken a step back and shown perhaps some weakness in the program, but continue to maintain the momentum moving forward and the dominance over Miami. That's a really, really big deal. But in any case, as I was saying before, apologies that this podcast has come so late in the week. Some things came up that were unavoidable. So I'm having actually to combine this analysis of the Miami game also with a little bit of a preview of the Wake Forest game all in one podcast. I would normally do that obviously in two or three podcasts. Really, I'd hope to do three podcasts this week, looking with a little bit more detail at the Miami game. But with next week being a bye and so on, I'll end up doing a little bit more. I'll end up recovering some bases, going back to look at some things from earlier in the year as well, and also covering some additional detail on the Miami game, evaluating as we move forward. But I'll hit the high points here for the most part of some of the things that stuck out about the Miami game before then doing a short preview of Wake Forest, which really that preview doesn't need to be as long because I do think Florida State matches up really well in that game. So in any case, revisiting going back to the Miami game itself and revisiting what sort of our preview said going into that game, I think in many respects, aside from having that game end up, I projected it to be a bit higher scoring along with most people. I mean, this hit well under the over-under in this game, partly because of a few plays just not ending up being made and a couple key turnovers in the red zone on both sides, or one key turnover in the red zone or down in deep in opposing territory on each side helped this game stay under. But, I think by and large, this game went as expected. And I think a lot of people who were just sort of casual observers were surprised that Florida State's defense looked as good as it did against Miami. Well, first of all, it's Miami, and you're going to get the kind of effort that you got from defensive players against Miami because it's Miami. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that, you know, as we talked about in that podcast, let's not get overly, overly excited about how much better Florida State's defense looked against Miami. If this happens because Miami's offense just isn't as good as the other offenses that Florida State has played this year, that's still true after this game. I mean, Miami is the fifth best FBS offense that Florida State has played this year. Louisville, Ole Miss, North Carolina, and South Florida are all better offenses than what Miami puts on the field. All of them. And, you know, some FSU fans have come back to try to challenge that on Twitter this week after North Carolina put up a giant 3 points against Virginia Tech the week following the Florida State, you know, putting up 37 on Florida State. But they played against not just Virginia Tech, but the Hurricane. And Virginia Tech didn't do a whole lot better on the Hurricane. They only averaged 3.1 yards per play themselves. But North Carolina was idiotic in how they had tried to deal with the Hurricane conditions, just like Notre Dame, who had to deal with actually worse conditions earlier in the day at NC State. Notre Dame tried to throw the football over 30 times and, you know, put up 3 points and lost 10-3 against a not a very good North Carolina State team. And Larry Fedora and North Carolina decided to throw it 33 times against Virginia Tech, who, unlike North Carolina, was smart enough to keep it on the ground. They ran it 62 times versus 17 pass attempts. North Carolina threw it more times than they ran it, 33 times and then 33 pass attempts, only 29 rush attempts, including sacks. That's baffling to me. I mean, and I've gone back and I've broken down some of that tape for my responsibilities covering North Carolina, and it's just amazing that they decided to try to attack things the way that they did. And they did a real disservice to Mitch Trubisky, who's had a great year at quarterback, but managed a 6-1 completion to interception ratio in this game because he couldn't grip the football, and then with the wind and all of the other aspects of this, couldn't put the ball in the spaces that he needed to put it into to be able to have any sort of success. And receivers, yeah, of course they were running wide open in the secondary, but Virginia Tech was more than willing to let that happen because you couldn't throw in those conditions. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's just remarkable that they even tried to do that. So you can throw that one out. Other than that, North Carolina had scored 30 points in 11 straight games, I believe it was. So a better offense than Miami, without a doubt. And Miami came in, and not only do they not have as good an offense as any of the teams that Florida State had played so far this year, they decided to try to line it up in more pro-style personnel, bigger personnel, not trying to spread the Florida State defense out and take advantage of FSU's problems in the secondary that they've had since Derwin James went out, but rather tried to pound the football out of bigger packages, which allowed Florida State to go to three linebackers, to go to more of a 4-3 look, and put Jacob Pugh in the game at that Sam linebacker spot rather than a star, a defensive back at that spot, which really played into what Florida State can do better. Now, obviously, Florida State can't use that personnel against a four receiver set like what North Carolina or even USF and some of these others are putting on the field. You can't really maintain that personnel package against those offensive sets because you're winding up with Jacob Pugh trying to cover a slot receiver, you know, who runs a 4-4 in space. You don't want Jacob Pugh one-on-one with Ryan Switzer. But you can handle Jacob Pugh covering Njoku or one of the tight ends from Miami. You can deal with that on the Christopher Herndon, the other tight end at Miami. You can deal with that if Miami's going to try to go big. So I think that was a tactical error from Miami, not taking advantage of what Florida State's weaknesses are on this year's defense. And it allowed Florida State to be able to attack a little bit more as well and come downhill. I mean, the first play of the game, Jacob Pugh set the tone for this game and may have hurt Brad Kaya's shoulder on that first play by getting into the backfield and slamming Brad Kaya down for a big loss on the first play of the game. And that basically set the tone for this game and really gave the defense a lot of confidence going forward. But again, you can't really be overly you can't get overly excited about this at this point just because, again, the next good offense Florida State's going to play is Clemson, and Clemson is certainly not going to take the approach that Miami did. They're going to go 3-4 wide the entire game. They're going to spread things out and try to take advantage of FSU's weaknesses in the secondary. And without Derwin James on the field, and we still don't know whether or not he's going to be back for the Clemson game, that changes things pretty significantly. That said, I do think that Florida State did a better job overall in terms of assignment soundness, in terms of gap integrity up front. I think it's very clear that Derek Nnadi was much healthier for this game than he had been for previous games, and he made a big difference. You know, the coaching staff had been, you know, people within the program had been talking about Nnadi being, you know, basically Timmy Jernigan levels in camp, and we hadn't seen it so far this year. And all of a sudden in this game, he very clearly looked healthier and looked like that. Now, Miami's offensive line isn't great, but still, Florida State's defensive tackles won this game. They won their matchup on the inside and really challenged Miami's running game, and Miami was just not able to get anything going with those running backs and was not able to get a push inside. Rather, Florida State was able to get some tackles for loss, get those guys redirected in the backfield, and that made a big difference. And that's despite Matthew Thomas's ejection, which was the right call, but that was a little bit of a tit for tat from Florida State after some of the hits that had come in from DeAndre Francois. Now, obviously, if you're the FSU coaching staff, you want him to make that hit, but you want him to make it about 6 inches lower so that he gets basically the same effect, but without the targeting penalty and so on. So, but in any case, even after Matthew Thomas went out, Dontavius Jackson played well enough that he continues to earn more minutes. And he's not a guy that I would put on the field in place of Matthew Thomas. Thomas has played pretty well this year. It's more in place of Roderick Hoskins, who has not played as well this season. Dontavius Jackson is starting to, I think, push for more minutes in certain circumstances, in place perhaps of Roderick Hoskins, although Hoskins looked a little better in this game as well. Again, it was a matchup that suits Hoskins' skill set a little bit better than what you see against North Carolina or even a USF, and certainly against Louisville. So ultimately, Florida State was able to do what they needed to do in this game, and what we thought they'd be able to do, and do it even better than I thought they'd do coming into this game. Again, partly because of scheme, they were able to play man-to-man. One of the prescriptions that I had in this podcast and going in was, this is a game where you've got to press outside, you've got to play man, particularly on the boundary, and they did this. They went much more man and kept things simple and challenged Miami to beat them one-on-one, and you can do that with this Miami team. And they did it successfully. They played hard, and I think played well. Obviously they got a gift from Kaya with the interception in the end zone, but there also was a gift from the lights of the stadium as well on one that probably should have been intercepted on that last touchdown where Tavares McFadden lost the ball in the lights. But ultimately, they did what they needed to do in terms of coverage, in terms of keeping things simple, and matching up there. Levante Taylor, I think, handled himself well against a tough matchup, and Stacey Coley gave up a play or two, but ultimately handled himself well. Now, Taylor's not a good option outside against Clemson, because Clemson can match up Mike Williams out there, and he's just a different kind of animal, different kind of cat for a smaller corner, particularly as a freshman. But I think it will be interesting to see what Florida State does moving forward in terms of coverage and in terms of approach, because they've had some success, more success when they've been able to press with this group than when not. And you can still play press or press looks, and then work into zone coverage type stuff, like what they'll need to play against Clemson. And it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. The other thing, and this is something that I do think defensively is more of a lasting change or conclusion that we can draw from this Miami game. The other thing that we did see, and this was something that, again, in the preview, I'd questioned whether Florida State would change their approach a little bit at star, and whether we'd see Trey Marshall at star more against Miami because of Miami going a little bit bigger packages and their approach on offense, or whether we'd even see Marquez White move inside, or whether we'd see Myers, or whether we'd still see Lewis there. Well, Florida State, most of the game, when they were in their 4-2-5 set, or 3-3-5, 4-2-5 set, did have Trey Marshall at star. Now, again, against Miami, who's a little bit more run heavy, they're not going to force him to play one-on-one from that position. You can do that a little bit more, but it'll be interesting to see if that's the approach that they take the next couple weeks. Are they going to take that approach against Wake Forest? Are they going to take that personnel approach against Clemson? Because Marshall has had some success at that star position the last couple of years. He's just not a one-on-one coverage guy at that star position, but he's at least assignment sound, and he's physical when he comes up to stop the run from that position, and doesn't miss his assignments in terms of diagnosing run pass and so on. It's going to be interesting to see if that's ultimately what they do, if they stick with him at the star position more. But the other thing that they did is they did a lot more situational substitution. Part of that is because Miami doesn't go up tempo, and so they don't force you to stay with the same personnel package all the time by not allowing you to substitute with tempo. Some of that also, though, was basically taking opportunity, even if Miami had been going tempo, taking the opportunity to switch out based on down and distance and all that. Some of that stuff you can do even against tempo teams that aren't, you know, flying at warp speed tempo, which most tempo teams aren't going warp speed all the time. You can change your personnel at star depending on situation and so on. And that's, I think, something that we'll probably see a little bit more going forward. And I think Florida State may have found something in how they approach the star position here. One is to use Marshall there more often, and the addition of Ermin Lane at safety, a guy who can play the safety position with range and with physicality. Obviously he's not, you know, ready for the big time as an elite safety, you know, from day one, but he played a lot better than I think anybody expected. I think better than the coaching staff expected, better than I expected, than just about anybody expected. And ultimately I think his presence back there does allow you to say, you know what, we can do stuff where he's not having to, he's not responsible to do a whole lot in terms of checks. He's just got a deep zone, and as long as he knows where he's got to go, you can then use Marshall more at that star position because you have someone that can play safety there. And then, of course, if you get Derwin James back, then you can put both Ermin Lane and Derwin James at those safety positions. I think for 2017, that certainly looks great. Lane immediately upgrades the athleticism back there, and the length and the size and the physicality, the speed at that position. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much playing time he gets against Wake Forest. I expect him to play almost the entire game against Wake Forest as they move forward and evaluate him against more spread looks. But he allowed them to do a little bit more in terms of moving Marshall up into the box, playing him at the star position and all that, and restoring a little bit more versatility to that defense. So that helps a lot as well. But the other thing is when they were in more of a passing scenario, they also moved Marquez White inside. Instead of having Marquez White on the outside, where, you know, obviously he's played the last couple of years, they put Marquez White on the inside, and again, he's a guy who doesn't blow assignments. He's a smart guy who has been in the system long enough to know what he's got to do at the various positions. And that's been really the biggest problem that Marcus Lewis had at the star position, was just blowing assignments, being assignment sound. And Lewis, you know, Lewis is a physical enough guy and has enough talent that he can play fine on the outside. But I think it just ended up being a mismatch. They thought, you know, that after he ultimately lost the battle for the outside corner position against Tavares McFadden, that they'd just slide him into star and things would be fine. But ultimately, he just blew too many assignments, and there were too many issues there. And I think it's partly because they didn't move him exclusively to star early enough. They should have just decided earlier, we're going to go with McFadden at the boundary. We're going to put you at the star, and yeah, I know you'd rather play outside in many respects, but you're going to have to play here, and you're going to have to get used to it. If you'd have played all camp there, maybe it would be different. But I think ultimately what they're going to have to do is use White more at the star position. And yeah, that's not the best for his draft stock, but it doesn't hurt his draft stock either. He's played outside for a year and a half now. Let him get some looks. Let him show that he can play in the slot corner. I don't think it'll hurt him in terms of his draft stock. And obviously, you know, your check, as Bud Elliott has said recently, you know, your check says, you know, Florida State, not NFL. You know, this is what's best for the football team at present, for best for winning. I think you put Marquez White in there and you solve a lot of the problems on passing downs when you slide him inside rather than putting Lewis inside. Because, you know, you lose a little bit of physicality, perhaps, in terms of a guy who's not as big, not as thick. But he's a reasonable enough tackler and is assignment sound. That's all you need. And you need somebody who can cover there. So ultimately, I think that package looks better with White on the inside. And then you can put – they had Levante Taylor on the outside. They put Lewis on the outside some – I think moving forward, you can go with McFadden, White, and Lewis like they thought they would, but instead of having Lewis on the inside, you put White on the inside, and you're much better off on in passing scenarios. And also Kyle Myers, the freshman, played played well enough again to be on the field, particularly in dime packages moving forward, and you know is obviously encouraging to see how he's developed over the course of the year. But I think that is probably the most interesting thing that I saw from this team defensively moving forward is how they approach the star position and how it appears that there's going to be there may be a solution for the star position or a couple solutions actually on the roster, and that they may be able to get that fixed enough to be competitive in time for the Clemson game. If they can get Marquez White at that star position and playing, you know, comfortably at that star position against Clemson, and use Marshall on more first and 10 type situations there, and then maybe slide White in on second down, that I think is a reasonable option, and maybe something they may have found something going forward. And then in that respect, this reminds me a little bit of the 2013 year, where I think a lot of people have forgotten that 2013 defense. People were really worried about that 2013 defense, and you know its inexperienced defensive coordinator through the first three or four games of that season, where they had given up some points, they'd given up plays, and it just didn't look like they'd quite found their feet. And, you know, they're trying to run sort of a bigger 3-4 package and all this, and it just wasn't working. You remember they had Dan Hicks starting on the outside there, and it just didn't work. It wasn't working. And it wasn't until until the Boston College game, second half of the Boston College game, that they moved Christian Jones down. They were, you know, doing a lot more nickel stuff, and they moved Christian Jones down, put his hand in the dirt at that sort of hybrid defensive end position, that rush end sort of 3-3-5, 4-2-5 kind of look, that all of a sudden that defense, all the pieces were in the right places. It took 4 or 5 games that year to get all the pieces in the right places. And once they were there, nobody touched that defense. Well, I think it may be a similar situation this year. Now, obviously, Derwin James isn't out there, so that makes it more difficult to have a situation where the right pieces are in the right places until he's back. But otherwise, I think it may be one of those situations where it took them a few games to kind of figure out what pieces really needed to be where in order for the defense to be best suited. And it's unfortunate that because of schedule, the first 6 games were basically the season. They weren't able to get the time necessary to kind of to mix and match and figure that out. And that's something they really needed to do better in the fall in camp, was to figure out who could actually do those things in camp. But I think moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not they really have, just like that 2013 team, found something that is going to work a little bit better. Now, you know, moving into the 2017 season, a lot of what they may have found may still apply. So long term, that may be a good thing. And that also may signal perhaps a little bit of a weakness in terms of how this coaching staff has approached things defensively. Not just in the Charles Kelly era, but actually going all the way back to through the 2013 season and signaling something that they may need to change there.
I mean, cross training is important, and it's useful to have a lot of guys able to do a lot of different things, and you want to be able to make sure you get your best 11 on the field and be able to move guys around and have guys play different roles, particularly in today's game where you have so many up-tempo offenses that force you to play with versatile personnel that can play different roles. So, you know, that really helps once you get it. But the thing is, it takes a while to be able to develop that. And it takes longer to learn more than one thing. It takes longer to learn more than one position. And if you are practicing for the majority of the time at, say, boundary corner, and then all of a sudden you are getting the majority of your time at star once the season actually starts, it takes a little while to gel. And I think that's something that ultimately this staff is going to have to find the balance for how to get guys in the right positions earlier in the season, to find ways to make sure that they have the right guys in these spots in camp, and they're getting reps much more consistently in the spots that they're going to be playing through the course of the season in camp, rather than using the first few games of the season to kind of figure that out. And that's, I mean, granted, this season is a little bit unusual in that regard, in that, you know, you had four new starters in the secondary. I guess if you include Derwin, then three. But he was only a starter in the second half of last year. But you got, you know, new starters across the board in the secondary, and then you lose Derwin James. It changes things, obviously, but it is something that I think we should consider. That should be thought about as this team moves forward. In any case, before we wrap, I want to look a little bit at the FSU offense as well against Miami. And this was something that we talked about in this game, that Miami's defense was, I think, up front the best defense that Florida State had played since Ole Miss. And in terms of a complete defense, I think it was the best defense that Florida State has played this year. Ole Miss had some serious problems in the secondary when they played Florida State, which ultimately let Florida State get back in that game and win that game, particularly because they just couldn't cover Florida State's receivers tightly. Miami was able to match up by and large with FSU's receivers on the outside, and then was able to cause some havoc up front. But ultimately, I think Florida State's offensive line played pretty well in this game. I mean, you get a lot of fans that are complaining about Florida State's offensive line performance in this game, but really, I don't think that's warranted. I think Florida State's offensive line, by and large, played really well. Particularly in the running game, they were able to clear the way to maintain possession. You know, there were not a lot of big plays in this game, but they were able to control the line of scrimmage against what I think is a very good Miami defensive line. It's the first defensive line Miami's had in a long time that has resembled a Miami defensive line. And you got to give tip your hat to Kuligowski, the Miami defensive line coach there, who is widely thought to be one of the best in the country, and I think is demonstrating that yet again with what he's putting on the field at Miami. I mean, they're Chad Thomas is a good player. You know, their defensive tackles are excellent, and you know, you get some people that were complaining about how Eberle looked at center. He was up against a nose tackle that's going to make a lot of centers look bad all year, and frankly, he held his own for the most part. There were a couple hands to the face situations that weren't called that made him look bad because he's getting pushed back into the backfield. But when you got a hand to your face, you're not going to succeed there at the center position. And generally, he did his job on one of the plays that you know, he kind of looked bad and got pushed back or whatever. There was a seam there, but Cook missed it. And you know, again, his job was to seal that off a little bit and create that seam, and he did his job. But Dalvin missed it. Bottom line, though, is that this offense has to play a lot better moving forward than it did against Miami if this team's going to be successful. You can't score three points and a half. You just can't, particularly in the first half. You can't afford to do that against good teams. And Florida State so far this year has scored 13, 10, 7, and 3 against the Power 5 opponents, Ole Miss, Louisville, Miami and UNC and Miami. That's not getting it done, and that's putting your defense in some really bad positions, and this defense isn't one that you can afford to do that with. So they've got to be able to finish drives in the first half. Averaged a little over 5 yards a play against Miami, which is not great. The thing that I think, again, I think the offensive line and the running game generally were pretty good and were better maybe than could be expected against the way that Miami has been playing against the run. I mean, they were 5 of 7 on short yardage, which is terrific. I mean, against a quality front, you don't expect that. I know a lot of fans are upset if you're ever stopped on third or fourth and short. But the reality is, against good teams, you're going to get stopped on third and fourth and short a lot. And this team wasn't against Miami, and that's one of the big reasons they won this game, is because they were able to maintain the football, maintain drives. They were able to run the football on first down, get into third and short most of the game, and were able to go 5 of 7 on short yardage. The big issue that I still see with this offense is that right now they cannot stretch the field vertically. Some of that is a function of the receivers on the field. It's not just a size issue. It's also a speed issue in terms of you don't have a guy with true elite level burst down the field. And then you combine that with the fact that they're also smallish receivers. I mean, Rudolph is decent size, but you know, the other two are not stretching the field either way. I mean, Whitfield has, you know, elite top end speed, but his type of top end speed has never converted well into being a vertical receiver. So that has been an issue, and it continues to be an issue that they've not been able to stretch the field vertically, and that's allowed teams to defend them a little bit differently, and to put a little bit more emphasis on getting good angles on Cook and others. And if Cook's not creating big plays, this team is not creating big plays. I mean, he is basically the big play offense for Florida State. And against Miami, they did a good job. You know, he had the one opportunity for a big run, and Cornell Elder had a good angle on him. And ultimately, you know, Elder's a very fast player as well and was able to bring him down. He also missed two other opportunities where he could have potentially scored on plays, where he missed a seam on one play where he probably should have scored on that play. And then on the first play from scrimmage, he actually broke through the line of scrimmage and had a real good shot of potentially taking that one to the house, and just stumbled, couldn't keep his feet, and ended up going down. But basically, the big problem is that if Cook doesn't create big plays, this offense doesn't have them, and they've got to find a way to manufacture big plays in the passing game. Some of it, like I said, is a result of wide receivers not being vertical guys. I think you need to get Alden Tate more involved in that regard. I think they need to have this week against Wake Forest gives them an opportunity to potentially get Keith Gavin, who definitely has big play potential as a vertical threat in the receiving game. Some reps against Wake Forest. I think that they're going to need to do that. But the other issue is that ultimately Francois has not thrown the deep ball well either. So it's not just a receiver issue. It's also the young quarterback has a really, really strong arm, but touch is still not his strong suit, and he has not thrown the deep ball well either on the post or on the bucket throws to the outside. He's just not done that especially well. And you know, he's done a lot of other things really well, but that's one that he hasn't hit so far on the year. And they need to be able to do that if they're going to have any chance of competing with Clemson in a couple weeks. They're going to have to be able to create some shots downfield and get some space to force Clemson to defend the whole field, because you're not just going to line up and run it on Clemson if they expect you to run it. With that defensive line they have, and with the way they flow downhill with the linebackers, you're not just going to be able to line up and run it. You've got to be able to challenge them downfield and threaten them vertically, or you're not going to have success. Talk a little bit more about that in the bye week and leading up to the Clemson game for sure. The other really big development is that the two tight end sets continue to be Florida State's best offense. You can really see that the difference that Maven Saunders' development has made to this offense, and particularly that great catch for a third down conversion, was critical in this game and showed exactly what he can bring to the table. I mean, he is one of the best athletes on this team, certainly an NFL plus level athlete at that tight end position. If he understands what he's doing, you're looking at a guy who is going to be a really, really good player, not just at this level, but at the next level as a receiving tight end, and brings a lot to the table. So that's a huge, huge deal. Puts a lot of stress on linebackers, and they were able to again take advantage of Miami's young linebackers with those tight ends, and create some mismatches down the field. And that's something, again, I think they're going to really emphasize moving forward, and it gives them some stuff that they can do against Clemson as well, taking advantage of some safeties and linebacker matchups. And again, if you're a heavy run team, having those guys that can block the edge and create vertical threats from the tight end position downfield really, really makes you difficult to defend. It's just another dimension. And we see that, you know, you've seen that the last few years from the Belichick teams up in New England with Gronkowski and some of the other tight ends they've had out there. Those two tight end sets just tear you up because of how much of a bind they put teams in, because you have to honor their ability to block while still dealing with and addressing their ability to get vertical. And Saunders certainly brings that to the table. Izzo is also a good receiving threat, and with his size shows some ability to get vertical in the seams as well. So, you know, that's a really big development. They need to continue to cultivate that and continue to use those sets. I think those sets get much more dangerous, though, once you add a big receiver on the outside who can create a vertical threat on the outside. So an Auden Tate or a Keith Gavin, you know, that's where 2017 looks especially good, because both of those guys are going to be ready, along with George Campbell, to really be contributors as big receivers on the outside of those two tight end sets. And that allows you to put stress on defenses basically on all planes, horizontal and vertical, in ways that that Jimbo Fisher in particular is very comfortable with and likes. So there's a lot of positives coming out of the Miami game. Still some negatives, still some things that need to be worked on if they're going to be competitive moving into the second half of the season. But overall, you know, you can't complain about seven in a row against Miami. I mean, that goes a long way towards sustaining success in this program. You cannot have continued success at Florida State unless you're consistently winning those in-state games, and that continues to keep Florida State as the premier program in the state, which puts them in line to land, you know, in toss-up cases. FSU's got the edge against Miami and Florida for top recruits, and that. Again, it's a self-sustaining situation if you can continue to win those games. I'm going to take one final segment then and touch on the Wake Forest game. There's really not a whole lot to talk about in this game. I don't think that Wake Forest should be competitive with this Florida State team, not this Wake Forest team, particularly not without Kendall Hinton. Kendall Hinton, just for full disclosure, Kendall Hinton was the quarterback at the high school that I coached quarterbacks before. Right before I signed on to coach quarterbacks at that high school, so I know a little bit about Hinton. He's a tremendous player, a real dual threat player, and really is the offense that Wake Forest has when he's on the field. He brings a lot to the table and makes them much more difficult to defend. But they're still not very good on offense, even with him at the quarterback position. So, you know, that's that. This is not a team that is anywhere in the same breath of the offenses that Florida State has faced so far, and I expect the Florida State defense to look dominant in this game. You know, with John Walford at quarterback, they can't stretch the field deep. They don't have wide receivers that scare you, and I don't think they're going to be able to block Florida State's front, particularly on the inside. They're going to have trouble scoring, and you know there's a reason they haven't scored a touchdown in, I'm not sure how many trips to Tallahassee now. I think it's in the last three or four trips to Tallahassee, Wake Forest has not scored a touchdown. That may end this week. I'm not sure it will, but you know I think this is a team that Florida State can kind of get healthy against. It's just a talent mismatch. They are much better than they've been in the past, but the Clawfence is just still not. They don't have the players to run what Clawson wants to run offensively. Defensively, this is a good football team. Wake Forest is a good football team. They will, you know, it's polar opposite to what Florida State has played early in the year in terms of offense versus defensive strength. This defense is a good defense. It's gonna cause some problems up front because of how much they move around and stem and the games they play up front. It's a good opportunity for this offensive line to continue to get comfortable dealing with stunts and slants and stemming fronts and different things in advance of playing against Clemson. They run a 4-2-5 set, which again it matches up very poorly in that regard when Florida State goes big. So expect to see again the two tight sets and these sorts of things, because that is the kind of thing Florida State can do. You can pound the football against this. It's an undersized Wake team. They don't have a defensive lineman over 290, and you know that you just got to be able to pound the football against them. I think Florida State can do that. Shortens the game a little bit. I think ultimately, if I'm Jimbo Fisher, I use this game as a development game on offense. I'm trying to make sure hammer home the point that we need to score early, and we need to go ahead and put the ball in the end zone and actually get points early in the game. That's something that I would be emphasizing if I were an offensive coach in this game, about finishing drives early in the game and calling the game specifically to try to get that done. Rather than, you know, sometimes I think he scripts plays more to see to kind of, you know, it's like a boxer jabbing early in the game, finding out where the defensive weaknesses are going to be. I think on this one, you just go for the jugular early on, and you try to work on making sure that your team just executes its base stuff and finishes drives early in the game. The more points you can score early, the better. I think otherwise you use this as a development game to work some of your young talent on the field. I think Jacquez Patrick needs to get the majority of the carries in this game. I don't think there's any reason for Dalvin Cook to get the majority of the carries in this game. I think he needs to get some carries. You got to keep him on the field some, but ultimately let this be a game where, again, you continue to give Patrick more of a role in a game where you can pound a smaller defense. I think this is a game where Auden Tate and Keith Gavin in particular, you get them on the field and get them live reps in advance of a game where you're probably going to need those guys against Clemson. And before the bye period, the bye week, where you can use that to continue to develop those young players and get them more ready for extended action in the second half of the year. This, to me, is the ideal game, particularly for Keith Gavin, who is the most talented receiver on the roster, to get him out there and get him a lot of reps, particularly in the second half, and see if you can start to trust him when the lights are on. And I think that's something that you definitely want to do. And again, if I were in the staff meetings, that's something I'd be emphasizing, is we need to make sure that we get Gavin in the ball game and get him some looks and get him some reps and make sure that, you know, we've got stuff that we then can correct and we can continue to work on in that bye week. Otherwise, you know, continue to rotate some linemen, stay fresh, all of those things. Work the deep ball, work off play action to try to develop that deep ball that has not been there over the course of the season so far. Work on getting some of those other things off of that pounding the running game as this game goes on. See if they can manufacture some big plays against a team that has not given many up this year. In any case, I think Florida State winds up dominating this game defensively. Don't take too much from that, because it's a bad Wake Forest offense. But I'm really going to be interested in seeing the effort level, because that maybe was the biggest difference against Miami. As much as they did schematically, that team played hard against Miami. That was one of the most physical games on both sides of the field, on both sides of the ball, that I've seen all season. And it was a real change from what I'd seen from Florida State so far this year. We'll see how much of that continues to carry over to Wake Forest. There's bound to be some drop-off, but I'm curious to see how much passion this defense plays against, particularly as they're able to get some confidence against a little bit of a lesser team. I ultimately think Florida State wins something like 38-10, maybe 38-9 or 38-6, somewhere in there. I don't know that they'll be able to score a ton of points against Wake Forest, but I also don't think Wake Forest is going to be able to move the ball or really appreciably score on this vaunted Charles Kelly defense either. And I suppose that'll put a bow on things for us here. That'll do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples and Seminoles Radio at Seminoles Radio, Seminoles Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And just a reminder that if you've been enjoying this podcast, please rate us, give effusive 5-star ratings on iTunes and other wherever else you you subscribe to podcasts. You can, again, subscribe to this podcast. If you are not a subscriber, you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. And, of course, you can listen to us via the Seminole Sports Radio app from vSporto or on Seminole Sports Radio on your web browser. And please go ahead and share these episodes on Facebook, on Twitter, through social media. The more listeners we get, the better off we are. The more episodes, ultimately, we can get out, the better advertising we can get, which then helps with resources anyway. So, once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm Jason Staples, your host. Thanks for listening.
I made this.